Welcome to the AT Pit Crew Podcast. This high-energy show dives deep into the world of sports emergency care. Join us as we explore cutting-edge strategies, real-world experiences, and expert insights to help you step up your game in emergency care. We've got the tools, tips, and stories you need to be ready when seconds matter. It's time for the AT Pit Crew Podcast. We have the green light in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the AT Pit Crew Podcast. I'm Ray Castle, and today we're honored to have Dr. Jim Kyle with us. Dr. Kyle, a leader in emergency and sports medicine, is here to discuss his WISE 5 initiative, which focuses on life-saving protocols for young athletes facing sudden cardiac arrest. This is an episode you won't want to miss, so let's get the drive started. So a little bit of background on Dr. Kyle. Dr. Kyle has over 40 years' experience as an emergency and sports medicine physician and serves as executive director of the Kyle Group. Known for his pioneering work in sports medicine, Dr. Kyle has developed initiatives to improve emergency response and life-saving measures in athletic settings. One of those being the medical timeout, as his creation, the Friday night medical timeout. His latest project, the WISE 5 initiative, targets second stage resuscitation protocols, especially in cases of sudden cardiac arrest among athletes. Dr. Kyle has served as a medical director in West Virginia, providing medical oversight for U.S. soccer and the Olympics, and is a chartered member of the American Medical Society for Sports Medicine. Dr. Kyle, great to have you here on the show.
Thanks for the invitation, Ray. It's sort of cold here in West Virginia today. I wish I was in Baton Rouge with you.
Well, it's a little cool here, but it'll be a little bit warmer, I think. You may be sweating a little bit by measures up there. So, yes, we've got a it's cool here today and up there, but I know this is a hot topic, and this will be one that we'll see a lot more in the future of. So let's go ahead and get started. Audience, just so you know, just a reminder, we have 10 questions with Dr. Kyle, then we'll move into a final rapid fire lap, and then we get into victory lane. So let's go ahead and get started. So Dr. Kyle, you know, one of the things, you know, we've talked about this a good bit is, you know, it's just endless talking about the WISE 5 initiative. And I know you came out with a video recently as well that did a great job explaining that in on-field care and coordinated response. So when you're looking at this approach to cardiac emergency sports, can you tell us a little bit about how your inspiration behind the WISE 5 and what it aims to achieve?
Well, that's a good question. As you recall, almost 2 years ago, the sports medicine community had a wake-up call during an NFL game where Damar Hamlin from the Buffalo Bills suffered a cardiac arrest at a game, a night game in Cincinnati. And the thought process later on in analyzing why appeared to be that he received a blow to the chest, cardiac concussion, or commotio cordis. And everybody wondered, well, that's sort of unusual. As we watched that response, it was notable that he was down on the field for more than 10 minutes before they got him in the truck. Fortunately, they had a very talented group of on-field rescuers, including 4 emergency physicians, one of whom was the airway doctor, and they needed an airway on him once he got in the truck. So that was sort of a wake-up call for all of us that are involved in providing care to high school athletes, saying, what if this happened in a small town, USA setting, in rural USA? How could we take the lessons learned from the NFL resuscitation and make sure that that same quality of care could be happened in your small high school located in your own community?
So the idea is that if you can do this in a small rural setting, there's no reason it can't occur. Then we're hitting everywhere in terms of large metropolitan areas. In theory, it should happen, but that's not always the case. But using this initiative is a much-needed upgrade in the protocols.
And because of this, school systems immediately looked in 2023, early 23, what are we doing about the primary response when an athlete goes down at our high school. The good news on that is if there's early recognition and two AED attempts, Ray, in the first 5 minutes, most of the time that's a successful outcome.
Yeah. And those are pretty hard statistics there too. So it's you have like a sevenfold increase in the first 2 minutes versus it drops down and down significantly as you move along in that continuum. So it definitely is the case, which leads into the case for doing rapid care, but also if you're having difficulty, if there is a issue in the resuscitation process, we also, I know as part of the Y5 initiative, we discussed the second stage of resuscitation.
Yes.
And we know it's a critical phase in emergency care. So what I'm like, if you don't mind, is just explain that second stage of resuscitation, what it involves, and why it's especially important for athletic trainers, team physicians, EMS that they work with, other providers that they're engaged with, the whole emergency response team, what's important to understand about that.
Okay. Well, there are several points. First of all, emphasizing what happens in the first 5 minutes, as we just spoke to, early recognition, hands only, CPR, AED, ASAP. And in that process, in the first 5 minutes, there's plenty of time to get two AED attempts in. When EMS arrives, or when the physician arrives on scene and two AED shocks have been given, that's when the Y5 comes into play. What to do next? What's your next step? You've got several potential interventions. Airway, IV, mechanical CPR device, medication. What's the proper order, the proper sequence? Now, remember, Ray, in a high school athlete, there are pretty much a finite number of causes. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is one. Commotio cordis is in play. But another entity called coronary artery anomalies also has to be considered, as well as long QT syndrome and the right ventricular partner of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy called ARVD, arrhythmogenic right ventricular dysplasia. So those five potentials need to be in the wheelhouse of EMS responding. Why didn't the shocks work? Or in the case with no shocks were delivered, if it's a non-shockable rhythm, what should you expect to do, and what's the next sequence of interventions?
Which gets into, you know, as an automated defibrillator, if they're in asystole, you won't see that. You won't see a pulse, so it's not going to do, you won't have any response, so you're still just doing CPR. So that tie-in, which really gets into the advanced defibrillation techniques, which in the Y5, we're looking at vector changes. Is that significant, that next step of this process? So what role do these advanced defibrillation techniques play in improving survival rates, and how, as athletic trainers, I wear two hats as an EMT and an athletic trainer, but as an athletic trainer, I'm there, and you see a lot of athletic trainers are in practices. There's not someone immediately there. So it's a practice. It's a non-event. So you may have EMS there. It's how they need to work on improving their emergency care protocols with that. Do you go into that a little?
Yes. And another point, Ray, in Baton Rouge, if your next door neighbor suffers a cardiac arrest and you run over and try to help and you're packing an AED, that's great. When EMS responds, they get there in about 5 minutes and they're responding to a cardiac arrest in progress. But on game night at your local high school, if EMS is already there, now they're responding to a witnessed athlete in play cardiac arrest. A whole different thought process. So EMS providers need to think through what's different about a witnessed young cardiac arrest versus an out of cardiac arrest on a 66-year-old they respond to. So that's an important, framework as you begin to learn about the next best step. And for small town USA in West Virginia, Ray, in the area that I cover with my EMS responsibilities for leadership, out of the 18 high schools, how many athletic trainers do you think we have certified?
Out of 18?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd probably say maybe, if you're lucky, probably 7.
We have 1.
Wow. That's it.
We have 1 certified athletic trainer. So we designed this intervention in terms of the primary response team, a 3-person critical care triad, as we call it, for equipment removal to be t-shirt cut, and then a cut down the middle of the shoulder pads from the left side of the athlete by the coach, exposing the chest, and AED pads to go underneath the shoulder pad. In Baton Rouge in August, those chests are pretty wet, and it's difficult to get the proper pad placement. Right side beside the sternum, left side more in mid-axillary line as opposed to underneath the nipple. That's the proper anterior lateral pad placement for the AED. Now, having said all that, we're expecting most of these athletes to be in V-fib when you witness the collapse. V-fib responds to the AED. If the pads are in the proper place, and have the proper connection.
And then, if it's further down the line, and I'll also, you mentioned this earlier, like EMS, how they're getting this call, like for a nod, someone's not there. And we know this, that a lot of times it may call off, okay, we have a reported seizure activity, and they're thinking seizure, not knowing it's a car. That changes a lot. It doesn't change the, not necessarily the response, but when they're there, it definitely, the acuity level now becomes significant, whether they're conscious, unconscious, or they move into the conscious state. That's a very different, how that information gets to EMS, the 911 operator, and what it gets out to EMS in terms of their response. So, I don't want to take, I don't want to get too off target on this, but you have to be thinking about that as well, is what seizure activity, how that presents, or mass an actual cardiac event.
Yeah, we've had, the Friday night medical timeout has always addressed the readiness for cardiac arrest on game day with location of AEDs and early awareness with sensitive seizures, seizure-like activity, or agonal respirations. This year, we added on to it the findings from Dr. John Dresner at UW, and his sports cardiology group. Dr. Dresner has analyzed several videos from athletes' sudden cardiac arrest, and now he's promoting the concept of eyes open, roll back, and chest moving, still breathing. So early recognition, seizure-like activity in an athlete who collapses during sports play is cardiac arrest until proven otherwise. And don't be surprised if eyes are open and chest is moving too.
Very good. That's an excellent lead in to, that's a part of the equation, a big part of the equation. But also we have to be thinking about training and the athletic trainers get formal training in airway management, using supplement, airway adjuncts. And thinking about also end-tidal CO2 monitoring levels. Are extremely critical in cardiac emergencies, as you well know. So how does, if you would, let's talk about airway management in CO2 trending to help athletic trainers and medics, team physicians, make those critical decisions during resuscitation. Because we see this in, the end-tidal CO2, they have those devices on EMS units. I know they have some portable ones you can get, less expensive. And something for athletic trainers to consider as well.
Yeah, Ray, how many of you think the athletic trainers at LSU have ever heard of end-tidal CO2?
Well, I know they all have because I know they go through the training with it, but while I worked there for 20 years, we, as part of our emergency medicine in our curriculum, this was a key point that we would talk about. And we're not, it doesn't get into it because you're going to have the device, but recognizing what's going on with EMS when they arrive. And I know they do a lot of coordinated response with the ambulance service. We do a lot of extensive training. And I know several of the their staff are EMTs as well. So I know that they're into that. I would assume that. I know they have that. But most athletic trainers aren't familiar with CO2, with entitled CO2. So because we don't have that, we don't use the device. So
that we need to certainly provide good information to the athletic training community about the utility of entitled CO2 during cardiac arrest. But before we get to that, our WISE 5 medics with lots of small town experience for many years in resuscitation, strongly recommend that the airway of choice in the downed athlete is a supraglottic airway. And the most commonly used one now is called the iGEP. Sort of when we were with you at LSU back in the pre-pandemic period, I think we were recommending the King Airway. Well, the iGEP is sort of the next generation, one step up from the King in ease of use and fewer complications. Once that airway is in place, an adapter is placed on it. And we showed this in the video you reviewed on transition when they got in the truck. And it gives a numerical number for the amount of carbon dioxide coming out of the airway. In cardiac arrest, circulation is impaired. So the normal entitled CO2 level of 35 to 40 drops below 20. So the entitled CO2 of less than 20 as you're doing a resuscitation with effective compressions will actually trend upward. And there'll be a jump of about 10 points when the heart starts beating on its own again. Suddenly it'll jump from 22 to 33. And that's a sign that return of spontaneous circulation or RUSC has occurred. So the entitled CO2 is a good adjunct, very helpful in making sure you're doing an effective resuscitation. Once again, part of the WISE 5. If things go good in the first 5, they're awake or at least breathing on their own and circulating. If they don't go good in the first 5 minutes, entitled CO2 is an important piece of the WISE 5 formula.
So that's a part of that. There's some of the newer tools that's been around for a while, but for those who haven't used it, it's one of the tools, critical tools to really start to consider, especially for athletic trainers, to have that device available before EMS arrives. It just provides that picture of what the person is truly looking like through the continuum of the emergency response. So along those lines, let's shift gears a little bit about with looking at new tools or medications and how we approach emergency response. So, now it's becoming more prevalent having mechanical CPR devices, like, for example, a Lucas device where they have the compression unit as well as and medication or viable options in the WISE 5, in implementing the WISE 5 initiative. And so if you would, discuss what their benefits are.
Well, you're right. The Lucas device is the most popular. The AutoPulse is another device. But most of the major schools like the University of Georgia and University of Michigan, athletic training staffs, I think, have decided to go with Lucas. What we learned early on in the 2-year investigation by the WISE 5 group of physicians and medics was that in the sim lab, taking the athlete from the 50-yard line to the truck on the sidelines or in the parking lot gates, we could not do effective compressions on the stretcher moving the athlete. So in order to get effective compressions while on the stretcher, the mechanical CPR device is not only necessary, it's essential. As we thought about the sequence of interventions in title, airway, IV, Lucas. Lucas early on was about the last piece of the puzzle for us, Ray. Now it's moved forward. And it's moved forward because it allows the responding crew, EMS, one medic, one EMT, small town USA, no athletic trainer, no team physician present, sort of trained rescuers. Yeah. It allows them to be hands-free early. So once the Lucas is going, it's easier to get an IV in, for example, or an airway. So the Lucas has moved up in the order of intervention since we started giving these recommendations. If you've got a Lucas, you want to use it early.
Well, it also, you think about from a back, if you're in a unit that, and you know this as well, is that you now have a third person who is consistently providing compressions. So it in the case of your back in the unit, you only have a BLS unit, you only have the driver and you have the other responder in the back. So they can, or it'll be a, you know, even that having a paramedic, they're issuing or delivering meds, they can do those things without a third person in there, ideally until they can intervene with another support group if needed to, or if it's BLS and then they're getting they're meeting with the BLS unit to support.
Yeah,
they have two people in the back.
And it's also important to know early on if you're going to have Lucas availability. If you're not going to have a Lucas to help get the athlete to the truck, you might want to stay on the field a little bit longer. And a good example of Crystal Shelnut is a paramedic, a very wise leader in the Athens, Georgia area. She's currently the Georgia State Trauma Program Director. Prior to that, she was Region 10, and Region 10 was Athens, Clark County, and the surrounding 10 counties. Those surrounding 10 counties are small-town rural settings, so it makes a nice place, a good example to target these interventions and see how they work compared to the regional trauma center in Athens. Those 10 counties, Ray, every one of them has a Lucas device, and two or three of them have a point-of-care ultrasound device on the truck, or POCUS device. In our southern West Virginia setting, you can't believe how many of the squads have Lucas devices, and they're expensive. But bringing Lucas into play early, if you've got it, is probably a good idea.
Yes, excellent. Yes, excellent idea. So Dr. Kyle, so as we move in, we're on lap six. So we got a couple more laps to go for everybody. Let's focus on, like we talked about this, from sudden cardiac arrest in young athletes, and that presents its own unique challenges. So what are the specific challenges in addressing cardiac arrest in young athletes as opposed to an adult population, and how does the WISE-5 tackle these?
Okay. Well, once again, the first step in preparing for a potential tragic event of collapse during sports play with a cardiac arrest is to make sure that the people on scene, the head coach, athletic trainer, and another trained CPR bystander have rehearsed and are ready to go with the critical care triad and get those shocks in quick. Pads on under 30 seconds. Hands only CPR. Boom. That works most of the time. But if it doesn't, what we think is the transition when EMS arrives can provide a crucial next step in resulting in a positive outcome. And that crucial next step is if the AED shocks did not work, there must be a reason. And the next step is to change the direction of the energy delivered by the defib shock. Put on your monitor pads, a cardiac monitor that EMS has brought to the scene and changed the pads from anterior lateral to anterior posterior, front to back, and deliver max energy for your next shot. That transition, I think, is going to be key in resistant cases of athlete sudden cardiac arrest.
That's a good point to note. And how we, and I guess that also involves, one, you have to have that working through your protocol and have that work through that, but also how you integrate that with EMS. And EMS has a different, you know, in their protocol as well. But I would add briefly before we head on, it's just really to think about if you're an athletic trainer in school and you're working these protocols, is to reach out to your local EMS agency, the medical director. They want efficient care, and we're providing care. But also, I think working, I want to emphasize, is having that physician-directed practice with an athletic trainer and the other providers they are providing with the school as well. So just really important just to work together in collaboration on the standpoint to have consistent protocols with EMS. And they want that. Everybody wants the same thing, and it makes it very easy from that standpoint. So as we move, I want to focus a little bit specifically on what the role of an athletic trainer is, and more so because many athletic trainers are there at a school by themselves. They have a small team, but the role they play in the advanced, or I'm going to say early intervention for emergency response. And what advice would you give athletic trainers and sports, like the sports medicine professionals, including EMS personnel, who want to incorporate the WISE-5 protocols into their emergency action plans?
Can you be a little more specific? What part?
Well, I guess, let's say, for example, if I'm getting ready to adopt my protocol, change my protocols, I'm at a school, how do I go about implementing the WISE-5 protocol? Do I need to go through a different process, or go through how would you change the protocol? If you're recommending to make a change, if you're a part of a review committee, what does that look like for someone who they've had a base protocol and they're looking to make a modification?
All high schools have to have emergency action plans for every venue. Some of them are sort of rubber stamped. Some of them are pretty well defined. And Ray, you've gone around and helped many high schools put it together the right way. So, in becoming a student of the WISE-5 initiative, you as the athletic trainer at the local high school should go through the process of rehearsing the emergency action plan that involves EMS on the scene. So you invite your EMS crew, go through your initial primary response team, and then the transition with EMS is the beginning of the WISE-5 thought process. You talk about it. Say, hey, instead of leaving them on their back, let's do a log roll when you guys get on scene. Put the base of the Lucas device down during that log roll and the mega mover to lift the athlete, and put the posterior cardiac monitor pad on, roll them back, and do it under 10 seconds. And it takes a little practice to be able to do that. That sets things in motion about rethinking athlete sudden cardiac response when EMS arrives. You got to practice preseason and basically look at your emergency action plan for sudden cardiac arrest and see if you want to update it.
Yep. Seeing how, I think important part of it, just seeing how, you know, I think something we don't think about, like I know in colleges, since it's having EMS, let's just see what they do, you know, without the integration. Let's just say, for example, just to have the medical, like the athletic training staff, just watch and say, hey, if you're not there, let's just see what EMS does. And if they're coming onto a field, so you see what that looks like and how, then you can start thinking about, okay, now I can easily see how the integration is, because a lot of times from an EMS perspective, you don't have providers that you're not expecting providers to be there. You're expecting It's a two or three man show. You know, you're not expecting they may have a bystander. So when you have a training provider, they're not accustomed to that either to some degree. So it requires training on both sides. So, as we think about with that in terms of, we talked about the training on both sides and having, we know the EMS does training, have athletic training, and you got to bring those together. And so we know we have to have an effective protocol that makes that an efficient protocol that makes that difference in life-saving difference. If we would, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about the WISE5 initiative and specifically how does it aim to improve or enhance outcomes in those, what are noticeable outcomes you're seeing or any data that supports this and say, hey, why should I go ahead and consider just moving to putting this in versus not putting it into a protocol?
Well, we don't have enough numbers specific to the high school athlete to make evidence-based recommendations. But in the full body of out-of-hospital cardiac arrests, OHCA data, some trends have developed since the pandemic, Ray, that are worth noting. One of those trends in ventricular fibrillation or pulseless VTAC is that the newer defibrillators with their proficiency need to be turned up to max energy for the next shock. So in a shockable rhythm, it's very clear now that if your next door neighbor goes down or the 16-year-old goes down, they need not one, not two, but three max energy shocks before they need any IV medication. Bang, bang, bang. So that's going to change your thought process at the high school field about trying to take time to put an IV in with only two rescuers there, EMS. Instead, your priority is going to be max energy. Different vector. Bang, bang, bang. And that's proven the literature in the whole body about a hospital cardiac arrest.
Well, I think two things that I get out of what you just said, and I think it's, one is you go back to like Dr. Dresser's, the research they've done on sudden cardiac arrest out of University of Washington, their cardiology group. There are a couple articles that look at that specifically, the incidents and also what happens from a response standpoint is that one is, it's relatively, of all of the injuries that occur, it's relatively low. I mean, less than 300. I mean, not estimated per year. That's about the cases they had. But you got to look at the bigger, like you mentioned, out-of-hospital care. That's the trended data. If it works in the overall group, why would you not do that for, given the best chance of survival? And that's just the one thing I think that really hits home for me, I think when you mentioned is we got to do the things that are best for cutting edge and how to do that effectively and is improving. Look at what the most effective outcomes are in those situations.
And non-shockable cardiac arrest, there's a different mindset. Shockable V-fib, pulses VTAC. Non-shockable is PEA, pulseless electrical activity, or asystole. PEA responds to epinephrine, IV, but it's got to be within the first 5 minutes. So in a non-shockable rhythm on the 50-yard line, the first move is your supraglottic and end tidal. We'll get back to that in a second, but if it's a very good end tidal, it could be that this is really not true PEA, but the new pseudo-PEA that we're seeing more and more because of ultrasound, cardiac ultrasound capability in the resuscitation suite and ERs. But back to that point, if it's PEA, supraglottic, end tidal, IV on the field, or IO intraosseous, and a milligram of epinephrine as quick as you can. So you can see now, Ray, we're given the formula for success from large studies in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest where epinephrine is important early and non-shockable, but not as effective as thought and shockable, and can be delayed. Delayed effort.
Efficient care. So, so which leads into, you know, we're, the more we learn about sudden cardiac arrest, and I think this was one that helped, seeing that at the very part of the show, you talked about Damar Hamlin, and we see these very visible cases. There's some other ones that have been, I know that I saw one talk that by a volleyball player who collapsed, and had a successful resuscitation. Is it also pushes us to do better from a resuscitation protocol standpoint and look at the future. So as we evolve, what are some advancements or changes you hope to see in the next few years and related to resuscitation protocols for sports settings? If it was the ideal world, like you're looking, what do you see this happening at the college, the high school, professional? I mean, where do you see some of those advancements or changes?
I think it's already happening. State legislatures are really pushing the point that you've got to have a smart heart focus on campus. And AEDs have to be within 3 minutes of any location in the school or on the sports venues. It's not a new initiative. We talked about AEDs way back when. In the early 2000s, and there's gradually in more and more schools. But I think the biggest challenge, Ray, and I don't have the answer to this, is how many sudden cardiac arrests have occurred in Baton Rouge middle schools in the past 10 years?
I know we've had several. So I think that's...
It just doesn't happen that often in your school.
Right. And also seeing that firsthand, I think now we're seeing that the advancements are really getting into the law standpoint where you don't want to regulate something because we know the regulation can be too a bad thing at times, but certain things for certain laws are requiring AEDs and CPR training in schools, not just for coaches, but for administrators, for having the entire population of students, even hands-only CPR. That's easy to do without having the certification, but having those who are supervising sports, they have to be certified. Having AEDs that are actually operational and they do regular checks. Yes. I mean, I can't tell you, I've seen that before. And it's like, I bring my own AEDs if I'm covering, not certain what's, it's great to have it in school, but I like to have a plan B. If for some reason my AED would not work, then I got plan B that's right here. You got somebody stacking back up. And then you also have the cavalry coming. EMS is going to, you're making the call to EMS.
Yeah. And to Dr. Dresner's point, he's been pushing this for the last 18 months or so. Hands only, CPR, no rescue breathing. Eyes open, chest moving. Put the pads on, Ray, and push the button. Analyze. It's not going to shock unless it's refit. So first, lay rescuers many times want to try to take a carotid pulse. And we've shown that in the field that lay rescuers or medics or doctors or nurses sometimes feel there is a pulse, there is none, or can't feel it, but it's there. So take the pulse.
Several years ago, that's one of the big changes that came into play in CPR. I want to say in 17 or either 18, I think it's when they made that change is, okay, we're maybe a little bit later, but it was maybe a couple of years, like maybe 19, can't remember the exact year, but I know that they changed, okay, we're going to do away with doing a carotid pulse in the late, in standard CPR, because they weren't doing it right to begin with. It was potentially more harm than good. So
this whole change in the initial 5-minute response, I think, is good and should be adopted by the sports medicine community. After that first shock is delivered, hands right on chest again. Don't wait and see. And that's an important concept. No oxygen in the first 5 minutes is different. We think that the exercising adolescent probably circulates good oxygen for up to 6, 7, even 8 minutes. Then that primary response team, crib care triad response being modified from what we were taught is an important principle, I think, in improving outcomes. after that primary response team does their job, EMS arrives, making the transition smooth and looking for a different vector of energy for the shock.
Hey.
And readying for the Lucas device, or the automated mechanical device, to ease and transition from the field to the truck.
We have two laps to go discussing cardiac emergency care and sports and the WISE 5 with Dr. James Kyle. So, Dr. Kyle, you know, our big last question is importance of continuing education and education. So, you know, we know that not just education, but ongoing education is essential for those in front lines of emergency medical response. What are the best ways for athletic trainers, physicians, the entire medical team, sports medicine team, as well as incorporating lay providers such as coaches to stay informed by updates in emergency protocols and resuscitation techniques?
Well, I think I'll say, first of all, in small town USA in rural settings, which is the focus of the WISE 5 initiative, there's one common denominator at every team meeting, practice, or game. And that common denominator is the coach, Coach Castle. They'll run through a wall for you if you ask them to. So the head coach has to get buy-in, and the head coach should be part of the critical care triad on practice day. The head coach has to get buy-in and be the leader of the process. If you have the luxury of having a certified athletic trainer, that's a key player also. And the athletic trainers, certified athletic trainers, need to be the catalyst for putting in some of these WISE 5 initiatives thought process, including the transition piece by chatting with the EMS squad that covers their practices and games, and say, have you thought about the WISE 5 transition and changing the vector? And that, once you say that, it's a common language.
Speak the common language and you'll get great results from it. So, all right. So let's roll in. We got five questions. This is our final lap. This is rapid fire. We're going to get five questions in probably less than a minute. And we'll have some little fun here. So you ready for this final speed lap, Dr. Kyle?
What's a speed lap?
Well, we're going to find out real fast. So okay. What that is. So what if we have a little fun here? So what is your favorite? No, question one. What's your favorite place you've worked in athletic events?
Olympics, 96.
Wow. Yep. I was there as well, but probably bumped into each other, didn't even know it at the time. So work on the
I was track and field with Ron Corson.
Yeah, I was at the practice facility down in the airport for a couple of weeks working there before the event Olympics began. So so your favorite TV series, or it could be a movie even.
Dirty Dozen.
Oh, that's a great one. That is a great, great movie. So and had a pretty good athlete in that movie too, right?
Yes.
Yep, like that as well. So, favorite cartoon character growing up?
Woody the Woodpecker.
Persistent. I guess that'd be the case, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so your favorite food or dessert?
I would have to go with a hot dog with Band Booster chili and onions.
That sounds interesting.
Band Booster chili, they make a big pot of that, Ray, and it's got to be reproducible.
Okay.
So you go to the local high school game, get some Band Booster chili on a good dog.
I was going to ask you, you solved that question for me. I was going to ask you Band Booster. I haven't quite heard that before. So last thing is a fun fact about you that the audience may not know.
A fun fact. I would say that, I'd have to go to the golf course and save my hole-in-ones.
That's pretty good. That's a really good fun fact. Because, and emphasize, audience, not hole-in-one, but hole-in-ones. And that's even, so how many hole-in-ones have you had?
Two.
I need to come hang out with you then. I make it good just by osmosis. So, with that. So, Dr. Kyle, so we're now in the victory lane, you know, our audience victory lane. Thank you, Dr. Kyle, so much and sharing your knowledge and insights on the WISE 5 initiative. Before we close, what's one takeaway you'd like our listeners to remember from this show?
Throughout my career, Ray, the working with the emergency medical services, EMS, and athletic trainers. Both these professions started about the same time in the late 70s, early 80s. And traditionally, they don't seem to like to play together easily. You're an exception. You're an EMT, athletic trainer, or others of those out there, and both understand the need to coordinate and practice and prepare for the unique injuries that occur on a sporting venue environment. We've got to talk to our EMS about sickle cell trait and delayed cardiac arrest with exercise collapse. We've got to explain to them bits and pieces about concussion and what might happen, as well as heat. And the trainers need to teach the EMS to cool prior to transport. So my take-home point is that let's continue to fuel education, joint education, for that sphere between EMS or ER, emergency medicine, and athletic training, sports medicine. That Venn diagram middle is a sweet spot, Ray, and folks like you and Action Medicine and other entities in the Southeast are doing an excellent job of getting the message out. Keep it up.
Well, thank you very much. I think that big sphere is getting a lot closer. It's definitely, we've seen a lot closer. It's codifying the role that both EMS and I'll say for athletic training, the uniqueness of the advantages we bring to both the table to make for an efficient tier, make for an efficient team overall. And also I want to say EMS. That includes your fire department as well. We've talked about EMS, but that includes the emergency response. So not just for the ambulance service, but for fire departments as well. Shout out for them because they do equally great work as well, making our job easy. The one thing I love to do for an event, if I see them there, like here, my job is to make your job easy. And if we don't have to call you, and they understand that, they know we're on the same page, and it works really well every time. So yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Kyle.
And the medical timeout that you alluded to in the beginning that you've adopted there in the state of Louisiana puts everybody together, all those entities together, to go through a checklist. What a great time to share information and get new knowledge. The new medical timeout for 2024 has QR codes on the back of it for Dr. Dresner's cardiac arrest video and equipment removal for C-spine injured athletes, all on the back with videos that can be shared, EMS, trainers, fire, the whole group, ready to look and learn together.
Well, we're going to get you on the show again, if you'd like, to come up talk about the medical timeout, because I know some updates we've had with that as well in the last year, correct?
Correct.
All right, good. So, hey, thanks so much for listening, and hope you enjoyed this show. Please make sure to click the follow button on your favorite podcast app so you never miss a lap. And don't forget, it's free. If you're interested in gaining valuable insights, courses, and more from some of the best in sports emergency care, please sign up for the Vital Connection newsletter at actionmed.co. I'm Ray Castle, and you've been listening to the AT Pickman Podcast. We're out of here.
Thank you for joining us on the AT Pickman Podcast. We encourage you to like, subscribe, and join our community. For more information about this podcast show, visit www.actionmed.co/podcast. This show is a production of Action Medicine Consultants, LLC. The medical information provided within this program reflects the opinions of the hosts and guests and is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It should not be considered as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the guidance of your healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment.